Hello, this is Sharon, and I'm bringing you the pantograph for today, which is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. We'll begin today's reading on the front page of the paper with an article entitled "Measles Outbreak Prompts Response: Advocate Encourages Parents to Vaccinate." Responding to the nationwide rise in measles cases, Advocate Children's Medical Group is contacting parents across Illinois whose children are not fully vaccinated for the measles and encouraging them to call their pediatrician immediately. "We are sitting on the brink of a potential public health crisis," Dr. Aaron Traeger, pediatrician with Advocate Children's Medical Group in Bloomington, told the pantograph on Tuesday. Dr. Samina Yosef, a pediatrician with OSF Healthcare Medical Group in Bloomington, agreed. "Prior to vaccination, 495 measles deaths were annually in the United States, according to the CDC, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention," Yosef said. 3 to 4 million people were infected with measles annually in the U.S., 48,000 were hospitalized, and 1,000 had chronic disability, she said. Widespread vaccination over two generations dropped the number of measles cases by 99% in the United States. But recent measles outbreaks in pockets of the country where people have not been vaccinated have health officials concerned. As of Monday, 465 measles cases have been reported nationwide by the CDC, the second highest total in 25 years, with most of those cases involving children. New York City on Tuesday declared a public health emergency over a measles outbreak there. In Illinois, there have been 7 confirmed cases of measles, the highest since 17 were reported during all of 2015, said Melanie Arnold with the Illinois Department of Public Health. "We do not have any measles cases in McLean County," said Lisa Slater of the McLean County Health Department. "We looked back as far as 2003 and have had no confirmed cases of measles reported. But 2 of the 7 Illinois cases include college students in Champaign-Urbana," Traeger said. The measles vaccine, given as the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine, is given when children are 12 months old, with a second shot before children enter kindergarten. Both doses are required by the state before a child enters kindergarten. The Regional Office of Education checks student health records for immunization compliance. "We do not have issues with immunization compliance," said Mark Jauntry, Regional Superintendent of Schools for McLean, DeWitt, Logan, and Livingston counties. "Generally, we have 100% compliance with the first visit check. In our office, the vast majority of our patients are vaccinated against the measles," said Traeger. "Of all his patients and his partner's patients, fewer than 10 are not vaccinated, and most are unable to be vaccinated because of a medical condition such as cancer," he said. Yosef said among her and her partners, only one patient in the previous fiscal year wasn't vaccinated at 12 months, and 3 weren't vaccinated at 4 years old. All were delaying getting vaccinated until the children were ready to enter kindergarten, she said. "We do not, in our practice, accept any patients who choose to remain unvaccinated," Yosef said. Traeger said the number of unvaccinated patients has been trending upward because of a debunked paper from several years that drew a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. "I remind people that the initial paper has been debunked completely," Yosef said. The science has shown over and over again that there is not a link between autism and the vaccine, Traeger said. A recent study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association found the MMR vaccine didn't increase the risk of autism. Measles is a contagious disease that can cause pneumonia and encephalitis. If there was any doubt in our minds as to the safety of the vaccine, we wouldn't give it to our own kids, Traeger said. Zimmerman jury views video of police interview. Suspect denies killing ex-wife, asks to see three kids during meeting. Hours after his ex-wife was found dead in her Eastside Bloomington office, Kirk Zimmerman was asked by police if he had killed her. He denied being involved in her death. An interview of the 60-year-old suspect was played in court Tuesday in Zimmerman's trial on murder charges in the death of Pam Zimmerman, from whom he was divorced in 2012 after 20 years of marriage. Bloomington police spent about 7 hours with Zimmerman on November 4, 2014, covering a wide range of topics, including reasons for the divorce and his whereabouts the previous evening. Detectives Tim Power and Michael Johnson assured Zimmerman they were conducting interviews to exclude as well as identify suspects in the woman's death. But questions posed to Zimmerman after several hours indicated police had developed information that Zimmerman's car may have been seen in the area of 2103 East Washington Street, the building where his ex-wife worked, around the time she was shot four times. Zimmerman was asked, "Did you murder your wife?" "No," he responded. Zimmerman initially refused to submit a swabbing from inside his cheek for DNA testing and to allow police to swab his hands for traces of gunshot residue, but he complied with both requests later in the interview. Zimmerman reminded officers multiple times that he was told he was going to the police station to see his three children. "Is this genuine? Are you guys really going to take me to my kids?" Zimmerman asked them. The officers repeatedly told Zimmerman his teenage children were at the Children's Advocacy Center and would be available soon to see him. Zimmerman also asked officers for advice in helping talk to his children and helping them cope with the loss of their mother. Zimmerman did not provide an answer to detectives as to when he last had contact with his wife. The meeting was marked by long pauses as Zimmerman struggled to answer certain questions, including whether he had left his residence the night before the homicide. Saying he needed time to recharge his batteries, Zimmerman offered to put together a timeline of his activities the night his ex-wife was shot. "I don't even know what happened to Pam, so you can exclude me as a suspect," Zimmerman told Johnson. Zimmerman asked to see his three children at least six times during the initial 2 hours of the meeting, and he was asked directly if he had harmed his former wife. "Never did, and she never hurt me neither," said Zimmerman. Missing from Zimmerman's responses was the fact that his then-girlfriend, Kate Arthur, had spent several hours with him the night of the shooting. Arthur is believed to be a potential alibi witness for Zimmerman. She told police she went to his home shortly before 7 p.m., but left after he did not answer the door. She went back a short time later after Zimmerman contacted her, according to previous court testimony. Zimmerman said he was asleep when his girlfriend arrived the first time. The jury also saw a second interview conducted several weeks later, in which Zimmerman was accompanied by Bloomington lawyer John Schwulst. In that meeting, Zimmerman provided more specific information, including Arthur's visit. When asked why he did not initially disclose Arthur's visit, Zimmerman told police officers he had privacy concerns and his desire to just keep her out of this. Zimmerman was arrested 8 months after the killing and charged with first-degree murder. According to testimony Monday from retired police detective John Atterbury, five Bloomington officers went to Kirk Zimmerman's workplace at State Farm to find him after his former wife was found. When he was summoned to a meeting with police and his supervisor, Zimmerman initially asked if he was being fired. When told the matter involved a family issue, Zimmerman asked if his three children were all right. When told his ex-wife was dead, Zimmerman asked if his children knew what had happened, according to the officer's testimony. The video shows Zimmerman sitting in a police station interview room where he agreed to accompany detectives for the meeting. In a soft voice, Zimmerman asked about his children. He also asked if his former wife had committed suicide. Police did not disclose how she died. And here's today's Flick Fact. Of all the nicknames of Central Illinois high school athletic teams, perhaps Iron Men, Normal Community, Corn Jerkers, Hoopston East Lynn, and Bunnies, Fisher, are the most unusual. Can you name how the bunnies got their name? And the answer, legend has it, Fisher boys basketball team was undergoing a long, long losing streak until one day the coach brought in a rabbit's foot and players began carrying them and their fortunes began turning around. Thus, the new nickname. Today is Wednesday, April 10th, the 100th day of 2019. There are 265 days left in this year. Today's highlight, on April 10th, 1865, Confederate General Robert E. Lee, a day after surrendering the Army of Northern Virginia at Appomattox Courthouse, said farewell to his men, praising them for their unsurpassed courage and fortitude. On this date in 1866, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals was incorporated. In 1912, the British liner RMS Titanic set sail from Southampton, England, on its ill-fated maiden voyage. In 1916, the Professional Golfers Association of America was founded in New York. In 1925, the F. Scott Fitzgerald novel, The Great Gatsby, was first published by Scribner's of New York. And in 1932, German President Paul von Hindenburg was reelected in a runoff. Adolf Hitler came in second. How time flies locally. 100 years ago, on April 10, 1919, plans are almost complete for construction of a new six-story apartment building at Washington and McLean Street, site of the Lafayette Apartments. It's set to contain 48 apartments with conveniences even the most modern Chicago units don't have. 75 years ago, April 10, 1944, Dear Jane, if I do not hear from you by Saturday, then I'll know it's over between us, signed John. That message sent to a bad address is in the dead letter box. The post office is begging letter writers to get the addresses right. John didn't. Romance probably over. 50 years ago, on April 10, 1969, Cooksville Mayor Charles Manley has been charged with a federal felony and could go to jail. He runs a boat dealership in Cooksville. The complaint alleges Manley sold several outboard motors he had put up as collateral for a bank loan, which is illegal. 25 years ago, April 10, 1994, Safe Harbor has closed for the season. During its six-month season, it housed 589 homeless people. Some work but are now on their own for sleeping. One will stay in his employer's shed. Another, an ex-con, says he hopes to find a tent, and sleep along the railroad. Strong winds expected. Bomb cyclone to blow through area and bring cooler temperatures. A storm system developing out west could drop several inches of snow across the plains. But in central Illinois, the biggest threat, starting Wednesday, will be damaging winds. This storm is part of the region's second bomb cyclone within a month, which results from a rapid pressure drop and brings in a potent, intense storm system. The most severe aspects of the storm system may miss central Illinois, but Kirk Hudel, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Lincoln, said he's expected strong, damaging winds that could send loose patio furniture and garbage cans rolling. Wind speeds will begin to increase Wednesday as the storm moves into central Illinois. Gusts will range from 20 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour, according to the Weather Service. By Thursday afternoon, the wind gusts will peak at about 41 miles per hour in Bloomington Normal. East of Bloomington and Decatur, a slight risk of severe storms is forecast for Thursday, which could mean isolated tornadoes, 1-inch hail, and deadly lightning, according to the Weather Service. From Bloomington to Peoria and from Decatur to Springfield, there will be a marginal storm risk, which poses less of a threat. After the last few warm and sunny spring days, the temperatures will drop below normal for central Illinois as the storm system moves through. The high temperature will reach the low 70s on Thursday before dropping to 40 Thursday night. Friday's high will be 50, about 10 degrees cooler than the average temperature for this time of year. Friday night will bring the lowest temperature at 34 degrees, which could leave some frost overnight. Through the weekend, the temperature will remain around 50. Monday and Tuesday will be dry, and temperatures will start warming up again. As rare as inland bomb cyclones are, the resulting storms fit into the central Illinois severe weather season that spans April through June. A bomb cyclone often is over or near an ocean because it requires warm, moist air smacking into cold, dry air, along with volatile weather from the jet stream. The central and mountain part of the country may get one of these every few winters, said Greg Carbine, forecast branch service for the National Weather Service's Weather Prediction Center in Maryland. But this would be the second such storm in less than a month. The March 13th storm caused massive flooding in the Midwest, a blizzard in Colorado and Wyoming, and produced winds of between 96 miles per hour and 110 miles per hour. This week's bomb cyclone is expected to be similar in intensity and in snowfall, meteorologists say. Heavy wet snow will fall from the Nebraska Panhandle through south central and southeastern South Dakota and into western Minnesota. Township plans work on senior center and hall. 3 years after it opened at 600 East Willow Street, Normal Township's Senior Activity and Recreation Center is still growing, and officials are planning improvements to keep pace. The township will spend $1.1 million this year to renovate ARC and the Township Hall at 304 East Mulberry Street, and it will soon be able to offer more parking to the facility's 4,400 members. There are days we get 1,000 members coming in, and we know that can cause issues, said Rick Lewis, ARC's Director of Operations. I had a chance to talk to the staff at the Special Olympics building across Willow Street, and they've indicated they're more than happy to share their parking spaces with us when we have these overcrowded days. Lewis recommended members walk down to the Beach Street and Willow intersection to cross from Special Olympics to ARC. When asked if the town might paint a crosswalk between the two buildings, Township Supervisor Sarah Grammer said she may write a letter to Mayor Chris Coos. The township also will add more meeting space and replace the heating and air conditioning system at the building this year. The township extended its bonds by 3 years and will add $736,500 to the debt for the work. Officials are still waiting on plans for the renovated space from Farnsworth Group, which took on the project after the township board fired Young Architects of Bloomington in December. The township hall will get tuck pointing and a repaved parking lot for a total cost of $35,000. Officials discussed those and other issues during the township's annual meeting Tuesday at ARC. A week after Coos said Grammer acted to demean and vilify community partners by calling for Connect Transit's board to be recalled, she highlighted in her presentation the township's community partnerships, including a $30,000 award for the community health care clinic, a $14,000 grant, and a $20,000 in-kind donation to Sarah Bush Lincoln Piecemeal, and other in-kind arrangements. That's in addition to about $300,000 spent on the township's assistance program for low-income residents. That figure includes about $10,000 spent on Connect Transit passes for those residents. I just don't think enough people realize what a strong community partner the township has, said Grammer, of whether the presentation was directed at Coos. I've heard a lot of interesting comments from people who aren't happy with me in the last couple weeks. I just want to expand the story. Grammer also noted the township has expanded its partnerships like Silver Sneakers, a program that works with health insurance companies to pay the township ARC memberships for policy holders as preventative medical care. Two more, Renew Active and Silver and Fit, are now active as of January 1st. City to conduct national search for police chief. The city will conduct a national search to find a replacement for retiring Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler, but it will not involve hiring a consultant. I know there is some internal interest, but we will post this as a nationwide search, City Manager Tim Gleason told the City Council on Monday night. I see no need in using a consultant. This is something that can be conducted internally. Gleason said he plans to advertise the position in the next couple of weeks with the International Association of Chiefs of Police and other organizations. He outlined the search process after Wheeler addressed the council about his retirement, effective June 21st. Wheeler, 52, said his retirement was prompted by his wife being diagnosed with breast cancer about a month after he was appointed police chief in May 2018. He succeeded Brendan Hefner, who retired to become U.S. Marshal for the Central District of Illinois. While his wife, Justine, is well on her way to recovery, her struggle with cancer has led me to this decision, said Wheeler in a statement Friday. It is time to put family first and go enjoy life. Wheeler told the council Monday that he still has work to do before he leaves. I'm not done yet, said Wheeler. I still want to try and address some of the violence with teens, and we still have two recent murders that remain unsolved. There is no doubt in my mind that there are people out there who know what happened, and I want to plead for them to come forward. Regardless of whether or not we can put the closure on any of those during my time here, we have an outstanding police department full of very capable people, he added. Wheeler drew a standing ovation from the council and others who attended the meeting. I just want to recognize and appreciate the leadership that he's provided for the Bloomington Police Department, said Gleason. He's definitely a man of integrity. In other action, the council voted unanimously to award a contract not to exceed $35,000 to Housel, Levine & Associates to conduct a study related to a 40-year-old R3B multifamily residence district zoning provision that allows densities of up to 70 dwellings per acre. The study will focus on the impact of that type of high-density housing on historic residential neighborhoods adjacent to downtown. Some residents raised the issue during public hearings related to revision of the city's zoning code. The city already has paid the Chicago-based consulting firm more than $125,000 to assist in rewriting the zoning ordinance that the council adopted on March 11th. The council also voted unanimously to ratify a new 3-year labor contract with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 193. Terms for about 20 employees who work as stagehands at the city-owned Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts include 2% annual wage increases for the first 2 years and a 2.25% increase the third year. Because they work part-time, the employees do not receive the sick leave buyback benefit. Area calendar. Today, Wednesday, IWU honors convocation, 11 a.m. Wednesday at the Westbrook Auditorium, Presser Hall, Illinois Wesleyan University, Bloomington. Keynote speaker is the 2019 recipient of the Kemp Foundation Award for Teaching Excellence at IWU, Carmela Ferradins, Professor and Chair of Hispanic Studies. Unit 5 reads, 6:30 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Normal Public Library. On Thursday, Illinois State University's College of Applied Science and Technology Academy of Achievement Induction Ceremony, 9:30 a.m. at the Hancock Stadium Club Room, Normal. 8:30 a.m. will be the coffee hour. Lunch and Learn, 12:10 p.m. Thursday at the McLean County Museum of History in Bloomington. The topic, The Keepers of the Flame, Mennonite College of Nursing, Illinois State University, 1919 to 2019. There will be a panel discussion with Catherine Miller and Suzanne Blystone. Unit 5 reads, 6:30 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Normal Public Library. And Spoon River Poetry Review, Lucretia Getzey Reading Series, will be 7 p.m. Thursday, Ewing Manor, Normal. The featured poets are Mark Svenvold and Kristen Prevelt, Jerome Rothenberg as well. A reception will follow. We will now take a short break and then return with the second half hour of the Pantograph. For today, which is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. Please stay tuned.